19 minutes past 8 o'clock, you're tuned into Morning Edition on KASU Jonesboro. Good morning, I'm Mark Smith. Joining me this morning by phone is U.S. Senator Mark Pryor. Good morning, Senator.
Good morning, and thank you for having me. I'm glad NPR is doing such a good job on covering all the Supreme Court stuff that's been going on.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about that. Major parts, of course, of the health care law are being weighed in the balance before the Supreme Court right now. And, of course, the court's not expected to render a decision until June. Justices are considering the constitutionality of the so-called individual mandate and some other questions as well. The question everybody seems to be asking about this individual mandate is, can the health care law still work if the mandate is shot down?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think they're going to talk about that today over there. And my guess is that parts of it could work, but basically the individual mandate is what really holds the law together. So a lot of people think if the individual mandate goes away, then the whole law will collapse. The problem is that you have a lot of things in the law that are very popular. You have, in Arkansas, 23,800 young adults are now on their parents' health insurance plans, and they couldn't have been on before. Got 34,000 seniors who are receiving more affordable prescription drugs because of the donut hole, and has been either closed or is closing. Preventive services are now free for 800,000 Arkansans that were not before. So, pre-existing conditions, all these things have been very popular, a lot of the insurance reforms, and my guess is if the individual mandate goes away, then all those positives go away as well.
Well, if the federal government can't require people to find health coverage in the marketplace, what are the alternatives for the healthcare system?
Well, this is a big question. You have to remember that the individual mandate is a conservative idea. This is something that the Republicans and conservative think tanks like the Heritage Foundation have been pushing for a long time. In the Senate, you have very prominent Republicans, Orrin Hatch, Chuck Grassley, and many, many others who've supported the individual mandate in the past. They don't support it now, but they supported it in the past and kind of got the idea launched. And, of course, former Governor Romney, former Speaker Gingrich, and former President George H.W. Bush all have supported the individual mandate. So, the reason they came up with that, and again, this is a Republican idea, the reason they came up with it is because they made the determination that that's the best way to do health care reform. So, we'll see what happens, and we'll see what the Supreme Court does with it, and we'll see how the arguments go today. But I would caution the listeners on one thing. A lot of the reporting about the Supreme Court case has been done by the political reporters for, various news organizations. This is a completely different forum, and they should not be speculating on how this thing's going to come out just simply because of the questions. You cannot do that with the U.S. Supreme Court. These guys ask all kinds of questions. A lot of the questions they ask were related to cases that were solved 25 years ago. They have nothing to do with, the particular facts of this case. So people need to take a breath, give the Supreme Court some time to decide this and stop speculating on this. Isn't a horse race. We're not watching a horse race here. We're watching the United States Supreme Court try to work through a very difficult legal matter.
And they take their time.
And you just have to trust the system. I hope they do it right. My guess is there's two or three or four, let's say, that are absolutely for overturning this, and there's, say, three or four that are absolutely against overturning it, and you have, one or two or three in the middle, and that's who's going to decide it. And so let's just let the Supreme Court do its job.
The problem is with health insurance, so many people are struggling now. They can't afford health insurance. So, what a lot of people are saying about this is forcing them to get it is an additional burden. But if they don't get it, premiums go up on the rest of us. It's very complicated.
It is complicated, and this is one thing that is just different about health insurance and health care coverage. Let me say this. A lot of people, the Republicans, love to talk about how expensive this bill is. They love to talk about how expensive it is. Well, what they don't ever tell you is more than half of the so-called cost of the bill is in tax credits for people to afford health insurance. Mm-hmm. So even though there is this mandate that people buy it, the government gives them a very hefty tax credit to do it, to help offset the cost. So it's not going to be free health care, but it's going to help people afford the health care. But you're right. What's happening is, in today's world and the way the health care and health insurance world works is when those people decide not to have coverage, they're shifting the cost to those of us who do. So the estimate right now is for all those people who don't have coverage, they're costing my family and your family and everyone else who has health, private health insurance, they're costing us about $1,000 a year out of our pocket to pay for them to not have health insurance, because when they get sick, when they show up at the emergency room, they can't pay for it. And so the emergency room, the hospital, the doctors, they charge us more because our insurance will pay for it.
Of course, we can't talk about people struggling right now without talking about gas prices. A lot of people are looking for someone to blame. Is it just greed? Is it President Obama's fault or market speculation? What is it?
Well, I think it's a whole combination of things. I think if people want to blame President Obama for this, then they ought to blame President Bush for the last time that it went to $4 a gallon. You know, and just what's fair is fair. And if you want to play the blame game, let's blame both parties for doing this. I think there's a lot of different reasons for this. One is speculation. I don't think there's any question that there is speculation that's driving up the cost. In fact, I saw a quote from someone, Bart Chilton, who's the Commodities Future Trading Commission commissioner. He says that if you have a Honda Civic, every time you fill up, you're paying $7.30 every time you fill up to Wall Street speculators. That's how much the money's going to them. There's other figures. Someone said the other day, Ford F-150, it's $14.56. You know, it costs about $100 now to fill up the tank, and $14 of that goes to the speculators. So I have legislation that I'm working on this. The Senate actually passed something two or three years ago now, I guess 3 years ago now. And, of course, the CFTC is putting the regs out right now. Well, guess who challenged those regs? Wall Street. Wall Street doesn't want any change here because they are making a ton of money on this speculating. And, you know, so we're working on this, and this really should be a high priority for the Congress to get this right.
Of course, we're fairly lucky here in Arkansas. We think our prices are high here, but they're low compared to a lot of other places.
They are, and that's what you get into with gasoline prices. They will vary within the state of Arkansas. Like if you are filling up in North Little Rock, where they have all the pipelines and the big storage tanks right there, they have very little transportation cost to get it from that facility to the local, you know, convenience store or gas station. But if you're going up to, say, Mountain Home, well, there's a lot of transportation cost there. So there's going to be several cents difference in the price per gallon. But one of the problems that we have here, and it's just, you know, just the cold hard facts of it, is the oil companies, the big five oil companies, have profited $137 billion in the last 12 months. That's profit. You know, they talk about, well, you know, we need to make this money because we have all these overhead and costs. Well, that's fine, but that's profit. $137 billion in profit, you know, that's after they pay for everything else. So there's a lot of factors that go into this, and one of the things that I think your listeners already know, but the old, you know, Adam Smith economics of supply and demand don't really affect the gas pump that much, because we have a big supply of gas. We have so much gasoline in this country right now, we're exporting it. We're exporting gasoline, and the prices we pay, you know, Adam Smith would say there must be a shortage of gasoline. There's not. And the refining capacity is as strong as it's been. We're drilling more in the U.S. than we have in a long time. We're importing less oil from the Middle East than we have in a long time. So, you know, there's just something about the economics that are not adding up here, and speculation's part of it. But, you know, there's going to be some other factors as well.
Now, some people have said that if the president had just approved this Keystone pipeline, it would have helped. You backed Keystone, but how much impact would that really have had?
Well, I'm for Keystone. I'm 100% for it, and I think it'll be fine in terms of environmental and everything else. I'm totally comfortable with it. But it's not going to help your prices right now. It's going to take them 2, 3, 4 years, probably 4 years to build that thing.
Right.
And, you know, it is going to help the economy some, and I'm all for that. But it doesn't have any bearing on gas prices today. And honestly, it may not that much in the future, not as much as some people think. There's been some people who've made some wild claims about how important Keystone is.
Right.
And I think now the economists are actually looking at it, and the politicians are having to back off a little bit because the economists have said, no, you guys are way too optimistic about the importance of this.
Aren't they planning on just exporting the results of that pipeline anyway?
A lot of that will go to places like Mexico and Latin America. They'll refine it in the U.S., but they'll ship it. And we talked about should we keep that in the U.S. In fact, I almost voted for an amendment to do that the other day, but it had some other things in the amendment I couldn't support. I think that's a judgment call about whether that's good policy or not. But this gets back into the oil industry and their practices and how they like to do their business. Back when we were talking about ANWR, which is the Alaska National Wildlife Refuge, mm-hmm. You know, we were talking about this, and you may not remember, or you probably remember, but 3 or 4 years ago, this was a hot and heavy issue, and we were talking about, finally, the thing that really changed the landscape here in Washington on that is we asked the oil companies, are you going to have to add on to the Alaskan pipeline to bring it down into the U.S.? And they said, no, because we probably won't take this oil to the U.S. We're going to send it to China.
Right.
You know, and so that's their mentality. I mean, we think of it as a great American national and natural resource, but the Chinese, I mean, the oil companies, they just see it as money. You know, they'll send it whoever the highest bidder is. So that's going to happen with this pipeline coming out of Canada right now as well. You're going to see some of the oil be refined and go to other places, but the truth is it's going to help our supply in the U.S., and it's going to lessen our dependence on oil from the Mideast, which I think is good policy.
Well, fuel prices are, of course, a major concern to farmers, affects their cost of production, and in turn, that goes down the line, affects commodity prices and the cost of our food and fiber. We're hearing about work starting on new farm legislation, and in fact, we're having a hearing on the new farm bill here at ASU Jonesboro this Friday.
Yeah, I'm really glad that Rick Crawford is doing that. I hope people come out and express to the congressman and to the Ag Committee staff, the House staff, just how important agriculture is to Northeast Arkansas because it's critically important to us. And also the USDA, it's not just all about row crop farming. So much of their budget is tied into other nutrition and food programs. And I just hope people roll out and express to Rick, of course, but also to the USDA, or to the House Committee, how important agriculture is to Arkansas.
I heard about this jobs bill that's headed to the president's desk. In this case, JOBS being an acronym for Jumpstart Our Business Startups. This, from what I've read, looks like the kind of legislation that's rarer than ivory-billed woodpeckers. It's a bill with widespread bipartisan support and support from the president. You voted in favor of it, but there are some Democrats that are concerned about the lack of oversight that could lead to investment scams.
Well, there are, and that was a big concern that we had in the Senate, and they offered an alternative in the Senate that had a lot more oversight in it. And I'm afraid, like you said, I'm afraid that if we're not careful on this, there could be some bad things happen down the road. But hopefully we have time to fix those. But anyway, the alternative failed in the Senate, which I did support, but I supported the bill as well. So, you know, let's just hope that the president signs it. Let's hope that it does help startups. It's a little bit mislabeled because they call it a jobs bill. The real jobs bill that the House has right now that they are not moving on is the transportation bill. Mm-hmm. That's the one that will create tens of thousands of jobs in the country, a big investment in America's infrastructure, and it does not raise the gas tax or anything like that. So I would hope that the House would take up the two-year bill and not just send us like a 60-day extension like they're talking about.
What's the problem? What's the holdup with this transportation bill?
Well, there's a lot of internal issues in the House. I know at one point they wanted to do a 5-year bill, and I'm all for a 5-year bill. I'd love to do that, but feasibly and realistically, I just don't think you can get one done. They couldn't get a 5-year bill out of the House, so you know now they say they want a 5-year bill. Well, if you want a 5-year bill, get one out of the House, and that's great. Let's bring it over to the Senate and let's work on it, but they haven't been able to do that, so to me it seems like a 2-year bill is a good alternative. Let's go ahead and get that one on the books and move on, and let's get out of this stopgap government. You know, this is really what got us in trouble a year or two ago when everything went down to the last minute, and it was all this brinksmanship, and we had to get 22 extensions on the FAA bill, and the government constantly was about to run out of money, almost going to have a government shutdown, all this stuff. Let's stop the drama. You know, my view is let's stop the drama. Let's start governing. Let's forget about the fact that this is a bipartisan bill that a lot of Democrats in the Senate like and a lot of Republicans in the Senate like. Let's just let the House pass the thing. And if they want to make some changes, hey, have them make some changes, and we'll look at the changes when they send them back over. But I sincerely hope that the House will get this moving.
Well, we got another thing that has sparked a national debate, and that's the shooting incident in Florida, the killing of Trayvon Martin. It sparked outrage, questions about gun laws in that state and across the nation. We don't know exactly what happened, of course, but it does appear that this man, the neighborhood watch man, jumped to some conclusions about this young man and may have acted on those conclusions. Without making any judgment on the case, if nothing else, this case points to points out, to those who have the legal right to carry a firearm that they bear a great responsibility with that right.
No, they really do. And this is where it's going to trigger a national debate here and a national conversation on this. And, you know, you want for gun owners to be very responsible, and you don't want them to misuse. We have the weapon, and we have a young man in Florida who's no longer with us today. And again, I don't know all the facts, and I know what I've read in the paper and what I've heard on the radio, et cetera, but I don't know all the facts. NPR's done a good job of covering this, by the way, but let's let the investigation happen. Let's find out what really happened, and, you know, let's let let it happen the way it should happen, and let's keep politics out of it and not get too revved up on either side on this.
Well, Senator Pryor, thanks for your time today.
Thank you very much. Let's do it again soon.
All right.
Okay.
Senator Mark Pryor joining us from his office in Washington. You're listening to Morning Edition on KASU.